Hello and welcome to The Stack. This week we speak with the team behind the recently launched Numéro Switzerland, plus a London-based food title and a one-off publication on Indonesian cookery. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We start the show with a welcome editorial addition to the Swiss magazine market. Numéro, launched in 1999 in Paris, already has licenses internationally, from Japan to Brazil. And now it is adding Numéro Switzerland and Numéro Homme Switzerland to its roster. I spoke with the team behind the launch, editor-in-chief Sebastian Magunaseleaya, and co-founders of Rochestein Publishing, Judas Berra and Sandra Roche. Sebastian, Judas and Sandra, welcome to Monocle Radio. We're going to talk about an exciting launch to the Swiss market, is Numéro Switzerland, the debut issue. Is practically out now. Perhaps I'll start with you, Sebastian. You're the editor-in-chief of the magazine. Tell us, first of all, about Numéro. Numéro is an iconic title. I believe it was founded in 1999, but now there are other international versions as well. So it's interesting that now they want to expand to Switzerland, right? Tell us a bit more.
Yes, we are very happy, you know, with this licensee. I'm very, very excited and happy because, you know, Numéro for me is like the best magazine, you know. I love the way that they are making the magazine, you know, combine fashion also with art.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of my favorite things about Numéro as well. And everything's very, you know, tasteful. And Sandra, I'll tell you, you and Judas, you're co-founders of Rochestein Publishing, which are responsible for the licensing of these titles. Tell us, how did it work? Did you had a conversation, you know, with the Numéro team? Tell us about the idea about bringing that to Switzerland.
Well, I met Judas and Sebastian, I think about 2 years ago now. We were on a photo shoot and we got on very well. And they were working in another magazine. And they left that magazine and then they were like, oh, what should we do next? And I said, you should do your own magazine. So then they actually asked me to come on board last summer. So then we started tendering for licenses and particularly for Numéro. And that's how it all started.
And Judas, yeah. Tell us about the Swiss market. I mean, how is it? Because it's not a market that is strange, you know, to the world of luxury and art. It's a great market, right?
It's such a great market. I think it's a market that is unexplored yet, you know, because all the luxury brands are in Switzerland. But if you see, there are no big titles produced in Switzerland, you know. Mostly the biggest titles are coming from Germany, from France, from Italy, and they are not fulfilling the needs of the Swiss people. And Swiss people, they live in a different world, you know. And I think it's such an amazing world that I think we need to showcase, you know, to the rest of the world. Because people outside doesn't have a clue, you know, of how the people lives in Switzerland. And I think it's really, really important that the Swiss market has its own big titles, like in this case, Numéro.
I agree, you know, 100%. And, you know, Switzerland's a market that loves print as well. You know, of course, you have France, you have Germany, you have all those big European countries. So it's nice to have, you know, its local issue as well. And Sebastian, perhaps in terms of content, of course, Numéro is an international publication. There will be a lot of content from other issues. But what are you doing to tailor to this specific Swiss market?
We are like in between. We need to put like 50 and 50. We are trying, you know, trying so hard because, you know, of course, Swiss market and they want to see, you know, like international news. But at the same time, of course, we need to generate like a community, you know, with different designers, artists, different talents. So this is the way that we decide, you know, it's like half and half.
Very good. Sandra, tell us about the market. I mean, I know it's the debut issue, right? That's coming out in March. I believe it'll be on sales on the kiosks in April. Is it, you know, because Switzerland is interesting. It's a small country, but there are several different markets. You have Zurich, you have Geneva, you have Basel as well. So where do you think the magazine would do? Is there any areas or is it a pan-Switzerland title?
It is a nationwide magazine, but we did the demographics and like 63% of the Swiss population speak German. So we concentrated on the Germanic side because, you know, there's a lot of French publications and even Numero France, you know, that do publish and also sell in Geneva on the French side. But of the Germanic population, of the whole Swiss population, 45% speak English. And under 18 years old, they did a big survey with NZZ. It's like the Sunday Times. And they saw that under 18, the 75% of people speak English. So we decided to capitalize on that. And the international wealthy community also speak English. So we have our magazine in English and German.
Amazing. And Judith, in terms of the publishing schedule, I like the ambition. Of course, this is just the start. There will be Numero Homme that's coming out a little bit later this year. But the intention is to make more issues as well, right? For next year and you know, 2026 as well.
Yes, exactly. The plan is, you know, at some point to have one magazine per month. But this year we are doing 4 issues, you know. I think it's a good start. So we start to know more about what the Swiss need, you know, in terms of art and fashion. And the next year, the plan is to do 6 issues. In 2026, 8 issues. So this is our plan right now. You know, the plan is to increase, of course. And with each year, we want to increase the team. Right now, we have a very good, you know, team in the magazine from Switzerland, from all over the world. And we are really, really happy. But of course, you know, in order to make more issues, we need more people, you know, in the team. I think it's an amazing travel. And, you know, in terms of content, we are trying to take care about, you know, what we are doing, because we are starting to receive a lot of submissions, but we are not accepting them. You know, we want to keep the quality of the magazine in a very high standard for the Swiss market.
And Sebastian, I just want to go back to the content, but I loved the first cover. I think such a chic cover. Tell us perhaps some of the highlights that people will be able to see on issue. I was going to say issue 1, but it's issue 0, right?
Yes, this is our debut issue, you know. And of course, we have like different contents. We have different sections. We have fashion, beauty, and a lot of interviews. You know, we have, for example, for our debut issue, we made an incredible editorial with Julian Ciherli. He's a very cool designer from, he born in Switzerland, you know, he also worked in Zurich. So we have, you know, to catch this personalities that they are like very talented, and I think in Switzerland there are a lot, but you know, you need to find them.
Amazing. And Sandra, just out of curiosity as well, Rochestein Publishing, what else do you guys work with? Is it mainly magazines or is it books? I'm just curious, or is it Numero something different, or perhaps just continue about, you know, the work you do?
We are a publishing house, so mainly it is magazines, and we're concentrating on Numero at the moment. But in future, we would like to incorporate lifestyle, maybe our own brand, or maybe a line of luxury goods that way. But we really do like it. In Switzerland, people like a niche, a unique luxury and good quality product. So the market is really open to that.
Thank you, Sebastian, Judas and Sandra. And Numero Switzerland is out now. Picnic Magazine is a London-based food and lifestyle publication, which launched in August 2022. It celebrates the wider food culture from the boroughs of London to the sun-kissed shores of California. Along with being a photographer, Marcus Brown is the founder and editor-in-chief of the magazine. Monaco's photography editor, Alex Milnes, spoke with Marcus in our studio.
So Picnic Magazine documents restaurant and dining culture, so there's less of a focus on food and drink itself, and more the people behind it, the people that work hard at like every step of food production. So whether it's like winemakers, people on vineyards, beekeepers, chefs, it's kind of documenting every part of that process. So when I go into a kitchen, I don't always necessarily know who I'm going to photograph. It may not be the head chef. It may be someone who's a kitchen porter. Just kind of every aspect that goes into putting food on your plate, essentially.
Yeah, it seems nice. To me, it seems it's like a food magazine with not a focus on food. It's everything else in between.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Food is like the central meeting point, but it's kind of everything around it that I find interesting.
And what was the inspiration behind it?
So prior to this, I ran a blog called Bistro Boys Magazine, which was initially pictures of food. It would be like short write-ups saying, oh, you know, this spot's really cool, it's really nice. And I thought, hang on, you know, this is a bit shit. Like, maybe we could interview chefs. Maybe we could speak to people and get a perspective. Because there's a million accounts on Instagram that are documenting kind of like cool places to eat or like nice dishes. And I just don't think it was that interesting. So we started a series called Chewing the Fat.
Yeah, I remember
which
that.
Which was an interview series that we started during lockdown. We would interview people like Willy's Pies, Top Cave, Ombra Restaurant with Mitchell. Just a whole bunch of people that were like in that food scene at the time. And most of those people, I think maybe even all are kind of still doing that kind of thing, but they've come a long way since then.
Yeah, it felt like you hit on something at exactly the right time. It was like the most coolest and relevant people who were up and coming in the food world.
Yeah, I think I didn't necessarily realize that was going to happen. I think it was just during lockdown, everyone had a bit more time to figure out what it was they wanted to do. So people were experimenting with, you know, fermentation, kefir, making honey, like every kind of possible thing. So it was a big time where a lot of people started out and had a bit of an abundance of time to do that. But yeah, a lot of those people have done really well since then.
Yeah. Honey was a good one. The Dr. Stings especially.
Yes.
That's gone massive.
Yeah, it's huge. And Pearly Queen honey as well.
Amazing.
I shot for the second issue. Just kind of focus on urban beekeeping all around London. It's great.
Great. And how do you decide the issue themes?
I think initially when I started, I didn't really have a theme in mind. With the first two issues, it was more just people that I found interesting and just continuously interviewing and shooting people until I felt I had enough to make a magazine. By the third issue, which is the Hollywood special, I was always kind of against Los Angeles, and I always figured that I was going to hate it, which is kind of why I wanted to go, to see if I could change my mind or if I could find interesting stuff, and I did. And there's like a lot of like great people doing cool things like Courage Bagels and Bad Mash, and it's a crazy scene.
That was a great issue. I remember seeing it on your Instagram as well, and it looked like a really fun trip full of amazing things.
It was. I was there for 6 or 7 days, and I think I was essentially just continuously shooting that entire time. And then on the last day of the trip, I was like, oh, I'm in LA. I just realized. And I like did some like hike up to the sign or something, did some touristy stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, it was, I think whenever I shoot an issue in a city, obviously I have a limited amount of time there and I want to get as much done as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And often it's like, that'll be like the holiday that I'm taking that year, but it'll be work. And I'll just try and meet as many people that I can in that time.
And how did it work in LA? Was it just you'd seen places on social media, recommendations?
I think after the first two issues, I really wanted to shoot a celebrity feature.
Yeah.
So as to kind of flex my muscles, I guess. So I kind of reached out to a few different people, and Eric Warheim was one of the people who got back to me because he runs a wine brand out there called Los Harris. So the initial trip was based around Eric. So I knew that I was going to go shoot those guys, and I just figured I'll research other places around there and see where else is interesting.
And what are your highlights from the past four issues?
I think definitely the work is the best part. The process of actually making the magazine is the best part. Kind of when I did the launch for the fourth issue, obviously it was amazing and it was really great that so many people showed out. But it was a big realization that, you know, the best part is the work, being in the kitchen, shooting the features. That's where all the magic happens. And I think what I love about Picnic is obviously it is somewhat orchestrated and it is content, but at the same time, it's kind of real life as well. And it's like all of those things that are in the mag actually happened.
Yeah, the real life element comes across, especially in the pictures and like having full bleed images on page. You kind of feel the energy and the pace of the kitchen. Like I think it was issue 4 with Mountain. Kind of feels like you're in there in the kitchen with them. And Thai Abs as well. It's like, can almost feel the heat coming through the pages.
Yeah, the Lahore feature. Yeah, that was amazing to be invited into Lahore, because it's a kitchen that's been open since 1972. And I don't know, I could be wrong, but I don't know that many other people have actually been in there and photographed in the way that we did for Picnic. So that was just amazing. And a lot of those chefs had been there for 25, 30 years.
Amazing.
Most restaurants you go to, chef will have been there probably a lot of the time, a maximum of like 2 years.
How long are you spending in the kitchen with people?
As long as they let me. I kind of just stick around until I feel like I'm getting in the way. And then I'm like, right, I should wrap this up.
Can you kind of tell? Does the vibe change?
Not hugely, but I'm like, okay, I think I've got enough now and I should let guys get on with service, essentially.
And you shoot most of it yourself. Is that right?
Pretty much all of it, yeah. There are a few features shot by other people, but almost all of it, yeah.
Yeah. How do you find that of, you know, you're the editor, you're shooting everything. Is it a lot to take on or is it enjoyable?
It is. I'm quite like, I have a very clear vision and idea of how I want it to be. And it's quite difficult to pass that to anyone else or allow them to do that. I think with the photography, I'm definitely going to continue to just be entirely shooting it myself because I love doing it.
Yeah.
And secondly, I don't have the budget to like pay another photographer to do it. And so I'd rather do it myself and have full creative control over it. In terms of the writing, definitely working with more contributing features writers in upcoming issues.
So how does it come about with, you know, the people you've worked with? I really liked Margo Henderson. That was a great thing with Service Works. You got Cold Source. Are you just approaching the people you like?
Essentially, yeah. Just kind of sending out emails. And I think I never really... I don't know if people think I'm doing something fancy or special in these emails, but I just send, to be honest, very short emails. Hi, how are you? Would you be up for featuring in Picnic Magazine? Have a great day. Marcus. And if they come back, they come back. And if they don't, they don't.
It's perfect.
I don't know.
Straight to the point.
Yeah. I don't kind of put together huge pitch decks or anything like that. I just say, do you want to do it? And if they do, they do. And it's always better when you're shooting someone that wants to be featured, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You can tell. Mm-hmm. People want to be shot. They're really into it.
Yeah.
So what's next? You got issue 5?
Yeah. So the first 4 issues are shot on film. And for issue 5, I wanted to go and do the exact opposite. So everything is going to be shot on iPhone for the upcoming issue. Essentially, I didn't want to become over-reliant on the film aesthetic. People love film, but I think you can take a bad film photograph and people will still like it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's out of focus, you know, it's not good. But because it has that look, it's got like that orange tinge, people are like, oh, wow. I think with an iPhone, it's a lot more unforgiving because a lot of people have an iPhone in their pocket. A lot of people use that camera. You know what an iPhone picture looks like. So if you want to take a photograph that is going to look different to what other people are doing or actually stand out, it has to be pretty flawless. So it's essentially just a new challenge, a new parameter.
Thank you very much, Marcus. And for more, go to picnicgiftshop.com. And we'll stay in the topic of food, by the way. Pedas is a one-off publication of Indonesian cookery, featuring 6 recipes and essays on Indonesian cuisine and culture. Its striking design is thanks to the collaboration between chef Rahel Stephanie and the creative studio Tiny Studio, based between Selatan in Indonesia and Paris. Monaco's Maylie Evans caught up with the team at Tiny Studio, art director Nadine Hanisia and design director Rata Bill, to find out more about this fiery zine. Maylie began by asking how the pedas came to be.
We've worked together for a few projects, like maybe there's around 5 projects in total. And I kind of knew her a long time ago, and then she approached us to do her flyers for the
supper clubs
in London. And we've been doing the posters for her for quite a while. We discussed together, the both of us, that I think it would be fun if we make a zine with her. And then the precise time as we were approaching her to tell her that we want to make a zine with her, she told us that she have all her recipes and everything. And I think it would be nice if we got the idea beforehand. So it's not like a very complex project at the beginning because she already know what she wants to make. And on our side, we also are eager to make a project with her.
What we like about working with Rahel is that she always trusts us 100% about the artistic pedas is what came out from that process.
And maybe we talk about pedas and maybe what it means for listeners who aren't so familiar with the term.
Pedas is literally translated to spicy, in the hot way of spicy. And it is a very common term in Indonesia because there is a lot of Indonesian food that is spicy. As Indonesian, that's one of the big element in Indonesian food as well. Most of Indonesian people can enjoy spiciness in some special way. Yeah. I think they can even take spiciness more than they can they be able to take, but I think that's the enjoyness of it. Yeah, I think that's pedas, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite struck by this idea, you know, it's a fiery cooking zine, it says on the front here, and how you reflected that in some of the design choices or font choices as well across the publication.
We really like to not overthink. The first time Rahel came to us with the idea of pedas, it's not so long until we have this idea of fire in our head. We instantly explored with the theme of fire, like the color of fire. Even we have the idea to have the zine burn in the photo shoot.
You kind of get the idea about the fire, but at the same time, it's quite girly. So we have like a lot of like red and pink tone.
We also like to balance with other things as well. So hence the fire became the main keyword. We also like to add elements from the femininity of it. We know very much that Rahel also add a lot of empowerment elements to it because she look at it as woman chef perspective.
It's also very easy and distinctive when she approached us with the pedas idea. And from that book, we're not only inspired by the spiciness, but we also very inspired by the idea and her idea as a person because she is that fiery and very bold as a person.
And I wanted to talk a bit about some of the, I guess, the reference points outside of food and some of the styling, because this is, you know, featuring a couple of recipes, but it feels very different, I guess, to some recipe books or food-centered, I guess, publications. Tell me a little bit about the choices in how you style the food or other reference points for that.
We work together with our stylist. Her name is Kiara Pense. And
I think Kiara has experiences with a lot of fashion editorial. We want to also treat the food like a fashion editorial somehow.
But like in Indonesia, when we see warteg is like a street food, but like it's very homemade.
Yeah, street diner, more like
street diner. Like, we brought all the elements of the warteg elements in the photo shoot, but like we kind of make it quite delicate and quite fashion references. Like, we kind of treat the photo very artistic and not that very kind of food styling as well, because for food, we don't really touch the things that we eat. Like for this photo shoot, we really want to feel by our hands. So we put the pearls, we put the glitters, we put everything like the fake flowers, anything that we could eat on top of the food to make it kind of realistic, but not too realistic.
We want the photo shoot to represent how it looks like when it's presented in the street diner of Indonesia. But we also want to add some new elements to it by adding the fashion editorial reference choices.
And the editing.
And the heavy editing.
Yeah, the very heavy editing.
And I quite like this addition of the, you sort of got the recipe and then at the end you've got a, so how was it? Moment where you can reflect and go, okay, well, how difficult was it? How tasty and success level? So it's kind of progress report for readers themselves.
The food is not very common in the UK especially, right? So we genuinely want to know how was it going for the people who tried to do the recipe. The design, the layout of the book is not like usual recipe book. As Design Studio, we often question ourselves, what about the graphic design that we can challenge and add some little fun to it, as long people could still read it and understand what's the book all about. I think there is a area where we could play a bit, because after all, it's not a novel, it's not a book that takes a lot of time to read. So I think by having some playful layout, the readers could also get into the journey of reading this book and spend some a little bit more time to it just for fun. We also trying to imitate how it feels when you eat too much spicy food. Sometimes we feel
very blurry and very dizzy,
even nauseous and sweaty. Those elements we try to also put it in the book by having blurry images and typefaces also have
texts, and as well this splatter
and tweaking the twirling typography as well. If you eat too much spicy food and you eat just like a simple book, you will get what we mean.
Thank you very much, Meili. For more, go to t-i-n-y.com. And that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Jack Juris. Any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fpnmonaco.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at 10 a.m. London time. You're listening to The Stack, and I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. It's a goodbye from me.